go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is Front Porch Friday on the horn. No, really, it is. We've made it to the end of the week. We've also made it to the end of the month of October, at least as far as conversation between you and I are concerned, because October will meet its end on Sunday. You know where I'd like to be Sunday? I would like to be in New Orleans. Sunday in New Orleans, we'll see a Halloween night matchup in the NFL between the blue and gold, or the black and gold, and the black and gold. The Pittsburgh Steelers are traveling to New Orleans to take on the Saints in the Superdome. And don't you just know that Halloween on Bourbon Street is one hell of a time? It's gotta be. But I'll be right here. It is, in fact, at least around here, tonight is the night when Halloween is being celebrated among those for whom Halloween matters most, that being little people. And by that I don't mean leprechauns and Keebler elves, I mean children. So as I speak, Agnes and Margie and Doodle and Ferg are all done up in their Halloween finest, and they're giving out the candy tonight. I think Ferg is going to be a scarecrow, just sort of laying flopped in a chair on the porch, and he's going to make little children probably wet their pants when he comes to life. Right? Yeah. So it should be quite fun. But you and me, we will be back here. You'll be there. I'll be back here. And we'll have Friday on the front porch. And maybe along the way, a little something fun, a little reading from this or a reading from that. Just to sort of set the Halloween stage. Because it's kind of fun. So here we go. It is Halloween weekend. I wish that I could say that the things we talk about on this program on any given evening are a matter of mere myth and superstition. I do have a story where we can. Completely off the political topic, but the kind of stuff that I'm fond of, and I know many of you are, that involves headlessness. We can do that at some point, simply because it's fascinating, and maybe. Like I said, maybe a reading from Poe or something. It's kind of like reading the Christmas story on Christmas, reading from Edgar Allan Poe on Halloween. It is getting scary out there. No kidding, it really is getting scary out there. Scarier and scarier and scarier. And it seems like all the terror is coming from one side. And you know which side that is. And of course, here we go. Just do the story, Bob. Damn, this is creepy. In fact, this story came up in conversation just a night or so ago. Well, it was during the conversation I had with Dave Nywert from Crooks and Liars. That would be would have been what, Wednesday night? Yeah, Wednesday night. And Dave was talking about the attack, stalking, whatever you want to call it, on Senator Patty Murray of Washington. You know, earlier in the year, a woman was recorded declaring that she wished to get a rope and go and hang Democratic Senator Patty Murray of Washington, who by no stretch of the imagination is anything we would regard as, you know, particularly liberal. Certainly no Paul Wellstone. But she has a D behind her name, and therefore she is fit for the slaughter, according to the Repiglicans and the Teabaggers and the like. There is a report out from Media Matters today, MediaMatters.org, and the lines between the people who enable and encourage these eliminationists and the eliminationists themselves is becoming brighter and brighter and brighter, and it is taking a hell of a lot of work on the part of the for-profit media to ignore it. Yeah, exactly, Texas Betsy. Not that we should be stalking someone who is like Paul Wellstone. No, I remember after Senator Wellstone died, the sense of sick grief that I felt when the president of the College Republicans said in a public speech, talking about what the Republicans needed to take back the Senate that year, if you recall when that happened. That's when Bill the Cat Killer Frist, a Halloween story in his own right, a tale of terror and misery in his own right, became majority leader. The president of the College Republicans at the time said, we had to, in describing what was needed to take back the Senate, said, we had to take out Senator Wellstone, and we did. And the audience cheered and clapped and laughed about intimations of murder. Yes, so agreed, Texas Betsy, not that we should be stalking someone who is like Wellstone. No, let's not stalk anybody. But that's our side. We don't want to stalk anybody. The most we want to do is hand a certificate suitable for framing to Rand Paul for being RePublicorp's Employee of the Month. And for that, she gets subjected to a good old-fashioned Kentucky head stomping. No, there's a Media Matters story about Charles Allen Wilson. Charles Allen Wilson was arrested for threatening Senator Patty Murray because she voted to pass the otherwise weak, anemic, and largely ineffectual health care reform bill. You know, the bill that graciously gave the insurance companies 30 million new customers. Oh, yeah. Look, while we're on Halloween, let's just face it. The health care reform bill was the whining of the insurance industry about it was the biggest case of please, Brer Fox, don't throw me in that old briar patch that has lately come down the political pike. It just is. But Charles Allen Wilson was all head up at Senator Patty Murray of Washington for voting to pass health care reform in some form. He left repeated threatening messages on her voicemail. He said things like, it only takes one piece of lead. Kill the, and I don't know, expletive, senator. Now that you've passed your health care bill, let the violence begin. He sent another one that said, I do believe that every one of you effing socialist, democratic, progressive, expletive, need to be taken out. He was arrested when a federal agent caught him, called him. This was one of those stings that you're kind of glad happened. A federal agent called him, pretending to be from an Americans for Prosperity group. You know, the right-wing AstroTurf organization that has been funding all these so many of these teabagging affairs. And he said, and Charles Allen Wilson said, I will not blink in discussing the possibility of shooting Senator Murray. Charles Allen Wilson said, it's not a threat. It's a guarantee. Wow, are you scared yet? It's Halloween. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. So, Media Matters did some work. Digging around in Charles Allen Wilson's case. And in digging around in Charles Allen Wilson's case, Media Matters found a letter. They found a letter that was addressed to the court from the Wilson family. Now, again, Charles Allen Wilson, okay, look, I'm not gonna beat around the bush. Send little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room if you don't want them to hear the kind of language that the right wing uses. All right? These are the words of Charles Allen Wilson. These are words of Charles Allen Wilson left on voicemail for Senator Patty Murray. Are little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room yet? Good. Just remember that as you are politicking for your re-election, it only takes one piece of lead. Kill the fucking senator! Kill the fucking senator! I'll donate the lead! Now that you've passed your health care bill, let the violence begin! Let the violence begin! By your attempts to overtake this country with socialism, somebody's gonna get to you one way or another and blow your fucking brains out. And I hope it does happen. If I have the chance, I would do it. Kill the fucking senator! Hang the fucking senator! I hope somebody puts a fucking bullet between your fucking eyes. Far left, liberal, socialist, democratic bitch. You motherfucker. You sold the fucking people of the country out for socialism. I hope somebody fucking erases your fucking life. Yes, I hope somebody assassinates you. You fucking bitch. We are going to fuck you up. We are going to fuck you up as bad as we can. Yes, the independents, the real people of this country, not you spineless fucking socialists. You better watch your fucking back, baby, because there's people gonna come after you with fucking both fucking barrels, bitch. Sorry, not my words. I don't generally use those words on this program. Those are the words of Charles Allen Wilson. Right winger. Good, God-fearing, upstanding patriot. Yeah. And may I remind you that this happened in the state of Washington. This isn't Kentucky. This isn't Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Texas, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida. No, this happened in Washington. These are the people that the Repig-Lickin Party are counting on to return them to power. And part of the way that they expect to be returned to power is by terrorizing you. I don't know how to... I don't tell anybody what to do on this program. But I will suggest this. You go and vote. You go and vote on Tuesday. You spine up and go out and vote. And if one of these Republican poll-watching thugs approaches you, understand, they are only to observe. They are not to be speaking to you. If they come up to you and say a word to them, don't say a word back. Go and find a member of law enforcement. Call your Secretary of State's office or your Board of Elections and say, there are people outside this polling place trying to intimidate voters. If a Republican says, may I see your license? If a poll observer, anybody, says, I want to see your identification, you look at them and say, I'll be right back, and you take your cell phone and you beep, 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 beep. What is it? 1-800-311-VOTE? Something like that? I heard Rick Smith giving it. I'm assuming that it's not just a Pennsylvania number. Because they have no right to do it. They are trying to keep you out of the polls, because that is how Republicans win elections, by keeping people from voting. Take this to heart. You know, I'm lucky. I'm a white guy. Nobody's going to approach me or question me. I wish they would. And I'm not suggesting anyone else do this. This is merely me. Because I would gladly look at them and say, get out of my way or I'll kill you. That's just me. Because the only way to deal with a Republican is to let them know that you will not back down, you will not be bullied, you will not be pushed around, and stand up to them. The best bet is not to speak to them at all. If they ask you for your ID, keep walking. They have no right to demand it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's so important that but just look. Look at who wants the Republicans to win. Thugs like Mr. Prophet, the Kentucky head stomper, wants the Republicans to win. Thugs like the campaign officers, the campaign officials for Eric Cantor, who had a man driven, his face driven into the concrete, want Republicans to win. People like Charles Allen Wilson want Republicans to win. At any rate, just to get back to the gist of the story, members of Charles Allen Wilson's family wrote letters to the court attempting to explain to the court what they perceived to be the source of Charles Allen Wilson's venomous hatred of Senator Murray. They were submitted to the court in conjunction with a sentencing request for leniency from Charles Wilson's attorney. In a sentencing memo, Wilson's attorney said the period of time in which he committed the offense conduct is totally aberrant when one looks at how Mr. Wilson has lived the rest of his life. So, Mr. Wilson's cousin, related to him through marriage, on September the 17th, wrote a letter to the court, and that letter said, in part, "What happened later with Charlie is something I think I can understand. He became basically housebound due to illness, and his small world became even smaller. His brother got him a computer, and he was able to stay connected with family, and he watched television and found Glenn Beck. I found Glenn Beck about the same time Charlie did. I understand how his fears were grown and fostered by Mr. Beck's persuasive personality. The same thing happened to me, but I went in a different direction with what I was seeing. Rather than blame politicians for the current issues, I simply got prepared for what Glenn said was coming." Oh, that's reassuring. That means he's got a lot of guns and instant water. Just add water. I slowly filled our pantry as Glenn fed fear into me. I did not miss watching his show and could not understand why the rest of the world didn't get it. Glenn, and I don't understand, I think this is a person not understanding the word he's using. Glenn became a pariah to me. No, I think he means Glenn became a prophet to me or something like that. Glenn became a pariah to me. But I was finally able to step away and realize the error of my ways. The media lost its grip on me, but it still held very tightly to Charlie. While his actions were undeniably wrong and his choices were terrible, in part they were the actions of others played out by a very gullible Charlie. He was under the spell that Glenn Beck cast, aided by the turbulent times in our economy. I don't believe that Charlie even had the ability to actually carry out his threats. So this is by way of making an excuse for a right-winger who left blood-curdling messages on a senator's voicemail. He was under the spell that Glenn Beck cast. Another relative wrote in defense of Charles Wilson. Charlie was never a man to be interested in politics until his health kept him home more and he got his first computer. His world was small and he seemed to spend most of his time at home watching television and on his computer. I truly believe that the recent events surrounding universal health care and its ramifications literally scared him beyond comprehension. He has had many surgeries in the past and has battled some major health issues. With his world being so small, he lost faith and sight of reality. I believe he is even mildly agoraphobic. In the past 10 years, he rarely left the Yakima Valley, and I honestly don't think he could have driven very far. As long as I've known Charlie, I've never known him to be violent or threatening. I've never witnessed any overt anger issues, nor have I seen him shout or strike anyone or anything. He's always been a person to help others, not harm them. That's the thing. The people being weaponized. Remember how they used to talk about weaponized anthrax? Because anthrax, qua anthrax, isn't much of a weapon. It has to be weaponized. Well, Charles Allen Wilson was weaponized by Glenn Beck. Just as the guy who went to shoot up the Tides Foundation was weaponized by Glenn Beck. In a way, you could say that Radio Rwanda really is Radio Rwanda, because Radio Rwanda, during the genocide in Rwanda, weaponized an entire segment of its population. And Glenn Beck's goal is to weaponize an entire segment of this population. A, to scare you away from the polls. B, to make you understand that if they don't get their way, you know, they're like children in a way, they will throw a fit. But Glenn Beck wants you to understand that if they don't get their way, they're not going to throw a fit, they're going to start shooting. Because they have no interest in representative democracy. They have no interest in the maintenance of this 230-some-odd-year-old experiment. They want the power, and by God, they want it now. And they will kill to get it. They will kill to get it. They will stomp heads. They will shoot. Another guy was taken down for stalking a Patty Murray event with a meat cleaver in Washington State. And the question is, will we let... it is entirely up to us whether we are willing to let them intimidate us. Sometimes you just have to bust out all 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Sometimes you just got to haul it up and gut up and spine up. And we're just talking about voting. You must go and vote. Do you know someone who has said, I ain't a gonna? Some liberal? I don't know. I just did it. Obama let me down. Go vote. I know it's a terrible thing. I wish the system were different. I wish the system was different. Where'd that word come from? I wish the system was different. I wish we all had good liberals that we could vote for, but we don't. And yeah, there really is a meaningful difference. If you think that this Congress has been weak-kneed, spineless, and ineffectual, you need not worry about that being the case with a Republican Congress. They will be neither weak-kneed, spineless, nor ineffectual. And everything they do will be geared at doing you in. And now, thanks to the Savages and the Becks and the Hannitys and the Limbaughs, they have an entire army of some 20% of the voting population that is largely willing to do violence on their behalf and at their say-so. The only hope you have in averting that is to go and vote. Simple enough, don't you think? Simple enough. Boo. This is the Halloween edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know how to reach the program, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. We are America's listener-supported, that means, you know, PayPal button, address, that kind of stuff, liberal voice. And we'll be back with your calls.
Run, run.
27 and a half minutes before the hour on this Halloween edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I don't say that enough because there are new listeners all the time. You know, there's a million different ways to listen to the program, all kinds of different online internet radio services. Tops among them, simply going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking the Listen Live button for either the ones. We've got a Java player that's just cool. But beyond that, there's different ways to listen, different bandwidth levels. And I've been mentioning lately, you can always get The Horn by downloading for free on your Android phone, TuneIn Radio. Real easy. Free download. If you've got an iPhone, you're gonna pay the Steve Jobs tax and pay an extra $1.99 for TuneIn Radio. But on either one of them, you have a choice of several different bandwidth levels, so that you can listen on just about, you know, like the AT&T Edge network. I tried it out just to make sure. Damn near dial-up. You can listen on dial-up. That's how hard we try to make sure that this is as accessible to everyone as it possibly can be. Yeah, Marty writing in saying all this just makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it? Not really. makes me afraid to be an American. And Clayton writing in saying, Senator Wellstone died? No, I think I call it murder. And it probably was. It was one of those Bush family stay-off small aircraft affairs. Dig it. If the House of Representatives goes repiglicking, then that Iott fellow, Rich Iott, the guy who says he's been in the military for 30 years but hasn't, he's in an unofficial militia in Ohio. He's never been called to duty. He will never be called to duty. He's a fraud. Can you imagine that a component of this Congress upcoming may be comprised of a guy who says that the SS and the Gestapo were good people who were only doing their jobs? No, really. And guess what? The man who would be speaker, Pumpkinhead John Boehner, is campaigning for Rich Iott this weekend. He is campaigning for a Nazi sympathizer. Now see, that doesn't violate Godwin's law for me to mention that. Because he really is. The guy who wants to be... I mean, say it with me. The guy who wants to be Speaker of the House of Representatives is campaigning for a Nazi sympathizer. The guy who wants to be Speaker of the House of Representatives is campaigning for a Nazi sympathizer. Let's see, that's twice, and it still sounds insane inside my head. The guy who wants to be Speaker of the House of Representatives of the United States is campaigning this weekend for a Nazi sympathizer. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, if there was anything to all the magic and hullabaloo out there, I would not want to be standing in the cemetery at Normandy right now. Because the earth would be moving from all those bodies turning over in their graves. The man who wants to be the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives this weekend is campaigning for a Nazi sympathizer. Is that worth what little time it would take for you to go out and vote? And to encourage someone else to as well? You know, one of those liberals looks, they haven't done anything for 2 years, and I think they just deserve the ass kicking they're going to get. You look at them and you say, hey! The guy who wants to be Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives is campaigning this weekend for a Nazi sympathizer! I mean, people, this is really house on fire stuff! Jesus Christ, Mean Gene Schmidt had a campaign appearance. Wish I was kidding.
Mean Gene Schmidt had a campaign appearance in Ohio with first graders and told them about abortion. Really? Now, children, abortion is when some godforsaken liberal reaches into mommy's tummy and kills the little baby that's inside it.
She did it at a Catholic school, by the way. Even the Catholic school was horrified. Halloween is a little too real for me this year. No, it's a lot too real. Phew. Jimmy. Oh, and there's more. There's more. There's plenty more. There's another Glenn Beck case out there. Oh, yeah. There is. The League of Women Voters has had to file complaints now in Evanston, Illinois. The FBI says that one of those LWV officials has been targeted by death threats because of a debate that she moderated. She's not even a candidate. She moderated the debate. Kathy Tate Bradish, with the League of Women Voters, had volunteered to moderate on October 21st at a debate in the Illinois 8th District. Conservatives, you know, teabaggers, right-wingers, Nazis, fascists, Republicans, were outraged because she expressed what they perceived as, in other words, there were no facts behind it. It's just the pure brainless rage, artificial and manufactured, you know, the kind that the editor of GQ described in his editorial this month as kind of cute. Support for the Pledge of Allegiance was only lukewarm. How did this happen? As the debate was about to get underway, somebody in the audience asked Ms. Tate Bradish whether or not they were going to, "Ain't we going to say the Pledge of Allegiance? You know, the one that Jesus taught us to say in the Bible? With all the under God in it?" And Kathy Tate Bradish explained to this mouth-breathing knuckle-walker that the pledge was not scheduled as the beginning of the event. And then the more than 300 people in the crowd stood up and recited it anyways, because they want Jesus to know they're saying his pledge. And she stood up and did it with them. It's not like she sat there while they did it. She stood up and said the pledge right with them. Because, you know, you're not allowed to not say the Pledge of Allegiance in Merca. She did, however, inform them that saying the Pledge of Allegiance is not typically something that is done at candidate debates moderated by the League of Women Voters. Enter Glenn Beck.
Thank you. have to tell you, I saw a video, what was it, yesterday, and I hope this thing goes viral, because I love this. There was a crowd of about 300. It turned out for a debate in Illinois, the 8th Congressional District. It happened last week. The most interesting part happened before the debate even started. The moderator of the debate was Kathy Tate Bradish. She was about to kick off the debate when someone suggested that they recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
Now, wait just a minute. When he says Kathy Tate Bradish, he makes this muggy face at the phone, sort of church lady-esque, if you know what I mean. You know, his little lips all puckered up, pursed up tight, little nose squinted. As if Kathy Tate Bradish doesn't have the right to have the name Kathy Tate Bradish, and there's something wrong with her for having a hyphenated name. Baby, it is all dog whistling.
After all, taking place in high school or student involvement, you know, still America. There were no video cameras allowed, but someone did have a cell phone and they were rolling digital tape. In this, you're going to see Republican candidate Joe Walsh. Watch what happens.
I'm sorry, do I have a point of order?
Are we going to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
No, we are not. That's not part of the proposal tonight.
Listen to the mob.
Excuse me. I have absolutely nothing for or against saying the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of something like this. But, in fact, that has never been part of...
Funny how it sounds a lot. It sounds a lot like people standing up and saying, "Ba ba 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 ba."
Okay.
Don't you know Jesus is proud?
First of all, who's neutral on the Pledge of Allegiance? Hey, I'm either for it or against it. I mean, what good reason is there to not to say it in this?
Okay, you miserable little fascist POS. What good reason is there for not saying it? How about because the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that you don't have to? How about because authoritarian group behavior like this is really frightening? How about because maybe people who don't adhere to taking oaths as a matter of their religion, Glenn, are made to feel unwelcome inside a political forum that is supposed to be for every citizen of that district? Who is it? The Seventh-day Adventurers, Jehovah's Witnesses, I don't know, somebody, Quakers, the Amish, something. They don't like to say the pledge. But you know what? Glenn is too fascist and stupid, because fascists generally are, to understand something like this. This is a case of a national symbol being used as a cudgel, but let's check in with Glenn some more.
Well, Kathy Tate Bradish, the moderator, tried to defend herself after the crowd recited the pledge, and then she tried to scold them. She knows better, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that will be the last time that I am disrespected. There is certainly no disrespect. There is no disrespect to the flag when something in a forum which does not typically begin with the Pledge of Allegiance doesn't begin with it. There is no disrespect intended.
There is no disrespect intended.
What a bunch of hogwash. Listen to the arrogance. She sounds like a teacher. Oh, she is. I wonder if she's part of the teachers' union. Anyway.
Jesus Christ.
Children, you will not disrespect me. Oh, is that what she's worried about? Really? Huh. Now, the Illinois League of Women Voters jumped to the moderator's defense. Executive Director Jan Zarnik. Notice she has Czar in her last name.
God! Jan Zarnik. Notice she has Czar in her last name, as if this woman was responsible for her last name. Glenn Beck's not going to be happy until blood runs in the streets, because he'll make money from blood running in the streets. You understand? But this, you know, this isn't just a display. This isn't just a, hey, everybody, let's listen to how insane Glenn Beck is.
And is calling this phony patriotism by supporters of candidate Joe Walsh in order just to bully the organization.
Well, that's only because that's what it is, Glenn. Just like your patriotism is phony. Just like your American history is phony. Just like your blackboard is phony. Just like your piety is phony.
What does that really say about your organization when someone saying, hey, can we say the Pledge of Allegiance is considered a setup?
Well, see, that wasn't what happened. But you've already heard it, so you know. They didn't say, can we say the Pledge of Allegiance? They said, are we gonna? Now, that was obviously a supporter of the Republican candidate asking that question. Don't think for a minute that this wasn't a little piece of political theater. But notice that the liberal did not, that no liberal ran over, knocked the person to the, asking the question to the ground, and stomped on his or her head.
And I'm the paranoid one.
Yes, you are!
I mean, are they violating some sort of principle by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance? Why would you do it? I mean, say it.
You see, he asked that question because he knows that the IQ of his viewership is somewhere around the temperature of a piece of raw meat that you've just taken out of the fridge. And yeah, there is, in a forum like this, something wrong. Because there are significant segments of our population who have the right to vote, who have the right to attend public meetings, and for whom uber-patriotic displays like this are intensely intimidating on, I repeat, religious grounds.
But that's not where the story ends. Sure, it ends that way for everybody else, but not on this program. We wanted to look at the moderator, Kathy Tate Bradish from the League of Women's Voters. Oh, she sounds so neutral and everything. I mean, she's even neutral on the pledge, apparently. Just a typical woman voter trying to get the truth out. Not so much. She's on fire for Obama. She's a big-time Obama supporter.
Oh, so now it's illegal to be an Obama supporter.
In fact, so much so, she's part of his Organizing for America arm. What?
Well, there goes that whole freedom of association thing, doesn't it? But that's okay, because we understand that in Republican world, the First Amendment exists only as a life support system for the religion industry.
She's even hosted a campaign event at her home.
Well, kill her! Kill her!
2007, part of her post on OFA's Organizing for America website, Hope, Action, Change. On March 31st, people across America opened their homes to friends, families, neighbors to kick off a week of support for a movement for Barack Obama and a movement to change America.
So let me see. In Glenn Beck world, Kathy Tate Bradish does not have the freedom to associate, and she does not have the freedom to express herself or her political views. Do you see? Do you see? Sorry, I'm getting a little head up here. Do you see the world, the nation, that these jackbooted goons want to create for you to live in?
Ray, I didn't know the changes, you know, meant to abandon the pledge, but that, hey.
So this airs on October 25th. Within a day, Kathy Tate Bradish was receiving death threats from the little knuckle walkers who hear Glenn Beck and obey. What did the Glenn Beck show say? Well, Joel Cheatwood, God, thou art a God of irony. Joel Cheatwood. Joel Woodcheat. Is an executive in some level degree of charge of the Beckerhead show. He issued a statement saying, "We're not going to comment on something that's hypothetical as we have not heard about this complaint." So Glenn Beck goes on the air and says everything except go kill this woman. How long is that? 4 minutes and 12 seconds of unrelenting dog whistling. The menacing posts were turned over to the FBI. And Glenn Beck's people say, "We're not going to comment because it's strictly hypothetical. Until someone kills her, the death threats are strictly hypothetical." And by the way, it isn't just Ms. Tate Bradish who has received death threats. It's the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Illinois, Jan Charnick as well. Not Zarnick. Charnick. C-Z-A-R-N-I-K. Charnick. This... again, it's frightening. The League of Women Voters was actually trying to be fair in choosing the moderator of the debate. They brought in someone from outside the 8th Congressional District, someone who couldn't vote for either one of the candidates in question. I'm sorry, there were three candidates. The Green Party's Bill Scherer was there as well. Representative Melissa Bean is the Democratic incumbent. And Republican Joe Walsh of McHenry is the Republican nominee. He's the one who planted the person. "Ain't we gonna say the pledge?" Yeah, I'm not just saying that. The person who asked the question, "Ain't we going to say the pledge to Jesus? Jesus wants us to say the pledge." It is Joseph Ptak. P-T-A-K. Joseph Ptak of Island Lake. He is, of course, an Air Force veteran. Of course, a Walsh spokesman said, no, this was all spontaneous. This wasn't planned. That was about the time that Joseph Ptak came out and said, "How'd that do?" No, I made that part up. You know, it's not supposed to be this hot this time of year. But God, if it doesn't feel boiling. It really, really. So we've got a couple of lines open. I hope you're still on hold. If you are one of the blinking lights, we will come to your phone calls almost immediately after we come back from the break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice, the Halloween edition. Blah. On the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
With Bubble Genius. They're making voodoo dolls of me, Sarah Palin, stuffed with elephant poo paper. You real Americans, don't retreat, reload. Don't settle for a doll. Stick pins in the real thing. Now my advisor said, oh, Sarah, I don't think you mean that. So I fired him on the spot for infringing on my First Amendment rights.
Bubble Genius, bath and body stuff that's good for your body and your funny bone. Try our apple pie-scented Vote soap or Eau de Wonk perfume.
Those Bubble Geniuses sound like commie, pinko, socialist to me. I mean, vegan soap I wash with reindeer fat like a true American.
Bubble Genius, for Election Day. Check out our promotion on Facebook to get a free soap for voting.
I repudiate your statement, you cackle of rads. The lamestream media is in the pocket of big soap.
Bubble Genius, for Election Day, and every day, but especially for Election Day.
So, how's that soapy, sudsy thing working out for you?
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Don't you just love that Bubble Genius ad? I do. And they're for real. They make really good stuff. And just to let you know, just a reminder, we have not been paid to run that ad. I'm running that ad because I respect their work. Now, we have received a little care package of their soap so that we could tell you in honesty, me and that mouse in my pocket, that it's good stuff, because it really, really is. And I saw a tweet last night. I guess the ladies of Bubble Genius are in D.C. for the big Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert rally tomorrow. I should have tweeted him and told him to call in and let us know what's going on, but I don't know if anything's really cooking yet out on the mall. It's about 5.5 minutes past the hour. A couple of emails rolling in. Corey in Louisville remarking on the right-winger's insistence on saying the pledge. It says, Bob, it sounded more like ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Ba-ba-ba, under God, ba-ba-ba. This election year has gotten me completely depressed. Not because of the candidate, but because of the level of willful ignorance being displayed by the electorate. Yes, we will elect a guy who is campaigning with a Nazi sympathizer. Yes, we will elect a candidate who wants the woman to birth the baby, even if it will kill her, even if it was the product of race or incest. Yes, we will elect a candidate who says they are for reducing the deficit and will cut my Social Security and Medicare and will cut more taxes for the rich to do it. I'm going to vote Democratic this year, and fortunately I have real Democrats to vote for, but God damn it, why do I have to live surrounded by a bunch of fucking morons? Really, I have nothing good to look forward to other than U of L versus Pitt, and that may be the only good thing that happens all weekend long. Corey, in the state of Louisville. Yeah, see, that's the difference, I guess, between us liberals and them teabaggers. We follow candidates whose slogans are, yes, we can. Yes, we can. They follow candidates whose political philosophy is, by God, we will. I think Corey may well get tonight's toaster. Marty says it's listening to them pledge. It was like listening to robots without other thought or consciousness. Also noting, don't you know that Halloween is an evil plot to lead us astray from God and Christ, and I forget the rest of it? It's the same accusations they make against Harry Potter, and my family has a hard time understanding why I'm turning away from religion. By the way, Marty adds in reference to the World Series, yes, 2-0, I'm very happy. Let's not risk angering the baseball gods. I think I did something to anger them in 2002. Hide under your desk, Marty. Hide under your desk. And it's interesting that Corey would bring up the issue of willful ignorance. Because I got a note from my head writer, David, in Tennessee earlier today. And he said, among other things, that Fox, otherwise known as Radio Rwanda, et al., have given the ignorant in America a new, albeit dishonest, target. And thus, with the real history badly obscured and a false set of uglies installed, an all-too-large percentage of voters could be motivated to dislike, distrust, and frankly, desire to punish them. You know who them are. David says, so for the first time in 25 years, in this level of profusion, I can see white men with guns built this country bumper stickers on late model Camrys that are in good repair. Now, David's in Tennessee, but that's not a Tennessee thing. If you listen to the beginning of this program, you know that it is also a Washington State thing. It's a California thing. It's a New York thing. It's a Pennsylvania thing. It is an American thing. It is an American monster that is waiting to feast on blood. And here's the hint. It's your blood. Remember how George W. Bush used to say, "It's your money." Well, the teabaggers are out there. They're pissed. They're highly armed. And it's your blood. And they want it. Just saying. So, to the phones we go. Let's see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I got something, I guess sarcastic or smart aleck to say.
Well, we'll leave
and
that for folks to decide.
I've got something serious to say, so which should I say first?
You pick. Let's put the bitter pill behind the sweet and funny. So do the sarcastic first.
Okay, you and Sandy was talking yesterday about the meeting that Barack Obama had with the liberal media.
Yes. Yes.
And him putting Roosevelt under the wheel or whatever you want to call it.
Under the bus, yeah.
Yeah, under the bus. Okay, I got this idea that since he fires whoever is working for it, if Glenn Beck says something, he must be going to Glenn Beck's history school.
Yes.
Now, is that sarcastic or is that smart aleck or what?
No, I think that is sardonic at best.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought it was... I just happened to think about it. But I don't understand, Bob, why that guy should, and I'm talking about Glenn Beck, should be allowed to... Isn't that rallying up the people? What do you call it?
Incitement to riot?
Incitement to riot, yeah.
Yes, and if a crime is committed, I would suggest to you that also it is accessory before the fact.
Right.
In other words,
whatever the crime, be it murder or whatever.
Once that letter was accepted into court in federal court in Washington, the one that I read earlier, about how the Glenn Beck cast his spell over Charles Allen Wilson. Once that was accepted into court, a competent prosecutor would have tried to get a finding of fact on it.
I mean, I'm
wait, just a second. Let me just finish this out. A competent prosecutor would have tried to get a finding of fact on that letter, and once it was found as fact, that same U.S. attorney would have then taken Glenn Beck's name before the grand jury for accessory before the fact to the crime that Charles Allen Wilson committed. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because an accessory before the fact is someone who participates in a crime by helping it happen on the front end. But you see, we're all scared of the right-wing media machine. And making, and everybody, they're terrified. They didn't even have the guts to follow through on prosecuting Rush Limbaugh when the evidence was as high as his hips.
Right.
The guy was sending his maid out with thousands of dollars in a cigar box to come back with thousands of dollars worth of street drugs for his insatiable consumption. And the state of Florida didn't even have the guts to follow through on that prosecution.
And guess who helped him?
The ACLU.
Right.
And Rush Limbaugh has never said to this day another harsh word about the American Civil Liberties Union.
He shouldn't, because that sure did help him. But I remember when I was a kid that people who belonged to the Communist Party, I don't know if it was during that those hearings or not, because I don't, you know, when back in the 50s when they were having those House of Un-American activities. I don't know if that's when it was or not, but I remember being in school with this little boy, and his parents both got arrested for being communist. And I remember the last time I saw him, he was probably maybe about 12 years old, and he looked so lost, and he was out hitching rides along the highway because he'd lost his parents. And, of course, now, you know, C-SPAN has the Communist Party on sometime, but I remember it was against the law to belong to the Communist Party. At least in my mind, that's what I thought it was, because people were getting arrested for that.
Yes. And you know what? These right-wingers want to go back to that.
Yeah, but the thing is that these right-wingers, these are the ones that are stirring up stuff. And they're talking about taking the government, taking their country back. That's when they want to take the government. That's all. They're not taking the country back. And to me, those are the people that should be. I don't understand. I don't understand the Mormons. Is it this Mormon doctrine that they approve of him?
You'd have to ask a Mormon.
Obviously they are, and
well, their silence,
in the neck of the woods.
Their silence is their acceptance, is it not, Juanita?
I would think so. And, you know...
But, Juanita, the Mormon Church paid millions of dollars to take constitutional rights away from a significant segment of the population of the state of California. Are you surprised?
You're talking about the gay marriages, yeah.
Marriage equality, yes,
right.
Because same-sex couples and it's important, same-sex couples already had the right to marry in California, and Mormons spent millions of dollars to take that right away.
Yeah.
Not to keep them from getting it, but to take it away.
Well, I say this, you know, if they shouldn't have the right to get married or whatever, then they shouldn't have to pay taxes. And I don't know how people think that, what kind of life do they want? They want to get rid of, like that guy from Arkansas, the teacher from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Or the school board guy from Arkansas.
Who, interesting, has vowed that he will resign his post. I don't know if you saw that or not, but he said, I'm going to resign. I shouldn't have said what I said.
No, I didn't. The only news I've seen since last night is, well, I saw a little bit about the plane was packaged from Yemen. But, I saw, earlier this morning I saw the first part of, Washington Journal, and I missed it, but they showed like an ad for, Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And it was had part of that where the girl got stomped, which they say that she didn't. But he's using it in an ad, and that girl got all kind of grief. You know, the one calling in, the one that's been on there a long time, she got all kind of grief about, oh, you didn't show the whole thing or whatever. She said they showed one of his ads and then one of the other person's ads, and she said, we're just asking, you know how they have to ask a question now, and you have a subject matter, and, you know, just asking their opinion about attack ads and so forth, and we're just showing their ads, and she was really getting a lot of flack. And people were really standing up for that guy. And then I heard part of a debate with Vintner. And the guy running against him. Need I say more Vintner? But
yeah,
he was saying something too. I don't know who the Democrat was, but he was good. It was a really good debate, what I saw of it. And he said something to the Democrat that, well, I don't appreciate you showing some of my family in some of the ads. He said, that's not very, family value of you, or however you word it. And the guy said, Senator Vintner, you have no family values. He said, you proved that you have no family values. He didn't say anything else. He didn't say what it was, but...
He doesn't have to say much. He's going to get reelected. I mean...
Oh, and he's such a obnoxious little toot, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Twerp or whatever. But anyway...
Diaper Dave.
Yeah. But I basically... I've just wanted to know why people are allowed to incite people to violence in this country.
Well, you're not supposed to. You're not. You know, the old analogy is that you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
But we behave with such kid gloves toward the right-wing media that even the very government itself is afraid to take them on.
Yeah. Well,
remember, Barack Obama had Shirley Sherrod fired preemptively before Glenn Beck could get after him.
But because they said...
The White House fired Shirley Sherrod because they were afraid of Glenn Beck.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. He's fallen. He's doing Glenn Beck's bidding to me. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'm being facetious or not. I'm beginning to wonder if they haven't given him something.
No, I don't think he's doing Glenn Beck's bidding, but he might as well be by responding in fear of Glenn Beck.
Well,
you know, bless his heart, I was so proud of President Obama when he took the bull by the horns and said, listen, Rush Limbaugh says he wants me to fail. That's the Republican Party position because Rush Limbaugh leads the Republican Party. And it didn't. How long did it take before President Obama was running away from that?
I don't know.
Not very.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing, Bob. What? Something's wrong. I mean, maybe we just don't have anybody anymore that cares anything about we the people. I think, and it seems to me, I haven't read that interview that y'all were talking about, and I saw a little bit of the interview with Jon Stewart, and anyway, it seems to me like he's feels hurt because it's not been appreciated what he's done. I appreciated everything he's done, but I think what really bugs me is we've got to cooperate with the Republicans. I hate that. Why? Why have parties? Why do we have two different parties?
Why? Do you remember, Juanita, do you remember all those millions and millions and millions of times that senile, crazy, evil old Ronnie Reagan used to say, well, we do not negotiate with terrorists. And then he negotiated with the terrorists and did business with the terrorists and traded arms for hostages. But, you know, a million times, well, we do not negotiate with terrorists.
Uh-huh.
I remember that. I know you do, too. Why can the Democratic Party, why can the president not stand up, look at the Republicans, and say, we do not negotiate with terrorists?
Uh-huh.
Because they are.
Yes, they are, Bob. And that guy going to... that's another thing I heard, you know, what you were talking about, Boehner, going to advocate that Nazi. Well, to me, I'm beginning to think that that's what they are. Not beginning to think, I've been thinking it, but...
Well, if they elect one, they are!
Yeah.
I'm not yelling at you, you know that.
I know that, yeah.
I just want to drive that home.
Yeah.
Let's say it again. The guy who wants to be Speaker of the House of Representatives in the United States is actively campaigning this week for a Nazi sympathizer. And before some right winger who wouldn't, because I eat them alive, I have no patience for them. They never dare call. But before some right winger says, "Well, he's not a Nazi sympathizer. He just dresses like one." Before that happens, you know, what do you call it, Juanita, when a guy says, "The SS and the Gestapo were only doing their job.
Yeah.
They thought they were patriots too." What is that if not being sympathetic to Nazis? And if you are sympathetic to the position of Nazis, does that not make you a Nazi sympathizer?
Yeah. And you know, I saw him, I guess he was debating, I can't remember, but they were questioning him and somebody else, and they said the person against him was saying, you know, no, he had put down his occupation at one time as a soldier. And he said, "Well, I don't remember doing that." And anyway, the people that were questioning, they found the document where he had written it.
He's prayed it all out.
Asking what kind of soldier was he. And he never written.
He's an imaginary soldier.
He never really responded.
Just like he plays imaginary Nazis.
He was, he was a Nazi. You know, and he's a Nazi soldier, I believe. I believe there's a lot of them. And, you know, we thought that our people had defeated them. But boy.
No, that's why I said the entire cemetery at Normandy is going.
Yeah. I heard you say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Juanita, I got to roll along, but I hope you have a happy Halloween.
Okay, you too, Bob.
All right. Bye
and,
now.
I think Agnes should make a YouTube.
Oh, no. No. It took me a day to convince her to do that photo.
But that's amazing.
Isn't she frightening? I think she should have dressed that way for Halloween.
Yeah.
But instead she's doing
y'all
some sort
have,
of...
Yeah. Well, you're going to dress as...
Oh, I'm not dressing. I'm just sitting back here doing naked radio in the studio.
Okay.
I'm dressing up as a successful wealthy liberal. I'm pretending to be a successful wealthy liberal talk show host.
I want to ask you something before we go off. It's just a second.
Yeah, sure.
Or maybe more. But anyway, you sent me an email or something. Somebody wanted to email me or wanted me to email them. You remember?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I sent that person an email, but I haven't heard back, so I don't want them to think that I was ignoring it.
Understood. Understood.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Juanita, take care, dear.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. That leaves one line open, maybe more, depending on who waited and who didn't. Hey, welcome to the program.
My name is Christine O'Donnell, and I approve this message.
Oh, a call from the COD.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good, Megan. How about you?
I'm all right. Did you get my emails today?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
The funniest part about that is that I walked into work dressed like that, and my costume needed no explanation whatsoever.
They just... Got it.
They just knew.
Well, but then again, you are in Delaware.
Yeah.
Well, tell people what you did. Let's not keep this a joke between us.
Well, I wore a three-piece suit with heels. I had shoe covers, so it looked like I had gold belt buckles, and the toes of my shoes were turned up. I wore a witch hat and a wig and my pearls, and... people asked me if I was a witch, and I said, "No, I'm not a witch.
I'm you." Love it.
I didn't even have to get that far. People just pointed at me and said, "You're Christine O'Donnell."
How did it go over? Was anybody put off, or, you know, that's not nice?
No, they didn't say it. I think a couple of people just ignored me, so I just let it go. But a lot of people thought it was absolutely hysterical.
I do.
I think we've reached, well, I just think we've reached the point in election season that people have just gotten really tired of all the commercials that they're seeing, even in states where they can't vote for the candidates, so.
Well, I saw a friend of mine in the store earlier today, and I said, you know, I'll be glad when this political season's over and we can go back to the commercials on the radio just being for Preparation H again.
Oh, God, me too. Oh, my God. Actually, you were, pretty interesting you were talking about Glenn Beck tonight, because as I was listening to you earlier tonight, I got a tweet from Angelo who said, actually it was two tweets, he said that Fox News has cut Glenn Beck out of their election news coverage and that he's going to set up his own program now for election night, but ABC has gone and hired Andrew Breitbart to do elections.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nope. As a heart attack.
Wait, the Mickey Mouse Network is going to have Andrew Breitbart doing election coverage? Has nobody told ABC that that he's not a journalist? That he's a fraud?
Apparently not.
Well, so much for ABC's coverage.
I don't know who to watch now, because I'm not watching Fox.
No, I'd say MSNBC. No, don't watch any of them. If you want election coverage, we're going to have election coverage from 6 p.m. to midnight on Tuesday. Because it's my show. It's.
I'm having problems with my online connection. That's why I have to listen through my cell phone, because Verizon I'm not a real big fan of right now.
No, Verizon could screw up a one-car funeral.
You are not kidding.
I guess I'm not getting the big Verizon advertising contract anytime soon.
Oh my God. Hmm.
Yeah, they're all. But no, we're gonna have live coverage from 6 p.m. to midnight. I've been talking a little bit with John Fox and a little bit with Rick Smith. I'll invite we'll all talk about it, and we'll be like have like on the ground correspondence from whoever wants to call in. This is generally what we do anyway, and it's pretty fun. But as far as the TV box is concerned, if I was going to go with TV, I'd go with MSNBC's coverage, because then maybe you have to put up with Joe Scarborough, maybe you have to put up with Chris Matthews, but there might be some balance along the way from Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, and that at least
I like Maddow and Olbermann, so I'm probably just going to watch them. But if I have to see Breitbart on the screen or Glenn Beck, I'm probably going to break my TV.
Well, I just got an email in with a link from Sandra, from TPM. Headline: Andrew Breitbart to provide analysis for ABC News on election night. I think if you take YSIS off that word, you've got the real answer.
I think you'd be the correct, Bob.
Well, you know, don't be a stranger Tuesday night. Don't hesitate to call in if you want to. I did just get an email from Marty saying, I intend to skip all of the coverage. Sorry, Bob, even yours. Well, I get it.
But then again,
there might very well be a World Series game on that Marty needs to pay attention to, so I understand that.
I actually took a day off of work because I just knew that my mind would not be on my job that day, so I'm probably going to go in early, vote, and then kick back and watch the culmination of the three-ring circus that is our political...
Here. Get out the blender, put on Margaritaville, and just take the day. If I didn't have to be at work, I'd be tempted to do something similar.
Oh, God. Are we sure that there's not some conspiracy that Barnum and Bailey hasn't taken over our political system and they're secretly engineering all this just to...
I would feel better if they had. No, instead the United States Chamber of Commerce have, and they are not nearly as entertaining as the Barnum and Bailey.
Well, at least with Barnum and Bailey, the people have the sense to put on the red noses and the fake wigs and, you know, go around and just, I don't know, take handkerchiefs out of people's pants or something. I don't know.
Pull quarters from behind their ears or something. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
I get it.
But, yeah, I'm going to try and get internet connection before Election Day because I, quite frankly, I feel I'm without second skin without it.
Yeah, no kidding. I understand. But if you've got any photos of your costume for today, do feel free to send them along. That's got to have been wonderful.
Oh, I did send them to you.
I didn't get the photo part of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was
looking on my phone, so maybe it just didn't. Okay. Let me scroll down here. Maybe I did get it.
Okay.
Okay. I'll go and look.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Megan. Oh, there you are. Okay, yeah, I found you.
Can I ask a big favor of you?
You can.
Is there any way you could just put me back on hold so I can listen to the rest of the program?
Well, I sure can.
Okay.
Just stand by, all right? Talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right, bye now. Megan calling from Delaware, and we are a full-service radio network, and we'll try to accommodate any reasonable request. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, boy, it is an idiot convention, isn't it? It's the three-ring circus. And
floppy shoes, red noses, the scream hair, absolutely.
Yeah, unfortunately, the clowns, I think, are from that cheesy B-movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space and not anything happy and friendly.
Oh, by the way, we have a tweet in from the leading liberal tweeter out there in answer to the question, why is Andrew Breitbart providing analysis for ABC? Ann Coulter was getting her horns done.
It's not analysis, it's anal ass.
There, yes, see?
That is what he is. Oh, but yeah, oh boy, it's just... When I voted on Wednesday early, I had no choice but to punch the ticket for Reed. I wanted to keep it nice and empty, like I've been doing for the past like three elections with Shelley.
Not
this time. No, it's not going to be like his last election where he won by a 3-1 margin. You know, it's going to be closer to the 98.
Well, but isn't she in front?
It depends on the polls.
As it always does.
Yeah, it's pretty much within Olbermann's Keith number. I'm certain in most polls, though. She's the undecided, the margin of error don't give her enough of a victory at this point, but I can't see how she'd win. There can't be that much crazy in this state.
But there is. I guess the big question for me, Garrett, is how can she win when she is deliberately trying to piss off the entirety of a substantial voting Hispanic population?
Oh, yeah. She had that Spanish language commercial with the don't vote.
Did that run? I heard that Univision wasn't going to run that.
I think it ran like maybe once or twice or something, or it got pulled almost instantly. But, yeah, it apparently did run.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean... that's a deciding voter block. I mean, that's 15% of your vote of your voting public in this state. And in an election this close, it's just going to happen. I mean, because it could come down to, because in 98, Ensign ran against Reed for his seat before Ensign got the other Senate seat in Nevada, and that thing went down. That was decided by like 854 votes or something like that. And they went to like recounts and stuff. It got nasty with the counting.
I just, I don't, if I was, if I was a liberal living in Nevada, Garrett, I would not be well. I would be a nervous wreck. You know what I mean? Sick making.
It must be the self delusion to keep myself sane or something, because no, it's not right. It's too hard to imagine her as the senator. It's bad enough that I do think that Reed the Younger is going to lose his shirt for governor.
That's Harry's son?
Yeah, Rory Reed. Yeah, that's Harry's son.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I fear...
I didn't know Nevada had that much room for that much spinelessness.
Spinelessness breeds. It breeds.
That's apparently a genetic disorder. I don't know.
But yeah, because what the thing about it is, unless because Rory Reed's opponent, I think he's one of those grooming, Republican big shots in the grooming, provided he doesn't do something stupid like Ensign.
But how stupid was what Ensign did? It doesn't seem to have cost him anything except the money that his parents paid to his, best friend's wife,
Well, nobody's throwing him out of office, but, the expectation is that he's going to lose his seat.
You think Ensign's going to lose his seat in 12?
He should.
Or 14? I'm not sure when he's up again.
Here's the thing. If Harry Reid does win, you know what's going to happen in 2012. Engel's going to freaking run for trying primary Ensign.
Well, I welcome her to do that.
Yeah. I mean, and I wouldn't surprise me if Loudon would also try to primary him.
Take a chicken to the primary?
But, yeah, I have a feeling that the Republican primary for Ensign's seat is going to be a feeding frenzy, just like Gibbons' seat was for the primary. That was a whole, every Republican and his brother went up for that seat.
And that may be the one thing that saves Harry Reid's bacon.
Yeah.
Internecine, repig-licking squabbling.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I don't envy you. I do not envy you. Your situation is a little bit different from mine. I've got a situation where whatever the outcome is, it winds up being sickening. Literally, not like, the philosophically or anything. Everybody running for office, with the exception of one human being in this state, in the major races, is in favor of making my family sicker.
Of course, because Cole, it's like here in Nevada. If you screw with in Nevada, if you screw with gaming or mining, you're not getting anywhere. Especially if you screw with the gambling and with gaming.
Well, I would almost. Yeah. I won't say that. Well, I hope you'll call in and tell us how it's going on Tuesday, okay?
I certainly will. But yeah, I'm hoping for the best, but planning for the worst.
I understand. Well, you have yourself a wonderful Halloween weekend, and we will talk soon.
Will do.
All right. Cross your fingers.
Already done.
Knock on wood and all the rest. Don't walk under any ladders or step on any cracks.
Yeah, I mean, unlike Marty, I think I have to watch what I do, and jinx it.
There you go. All right, you have a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Garrett calling from Las Vegas, and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up?
Oh, not much. How are you doing?
You know, just trying to ward off the fantods and the dribbling horrors, hoping that somehow or another this comes out differently than what it's projected to be.
You and me both. First, let me start off with a shout out to Megan.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear she's at least listening online.
Well, you know, that it really is encouraging all these different ways that this is, because eventually this will overtake terrestrial radio. It really will. You know, I love that. Well, I'm listening on my cell phone. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it will. It should. Got a couple of things to throw at you.
Okie doke.
Little thing about the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Back when I was in school, it was a mandatory part of the day.
Mine too.
Stand up and give with the pledge. And then about 1968, thereabouts, I stopped right when you got to the part about one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right.
Hauled up right there before the one nation under God and shut up.
Well, you know, I do that to this day, Cossack. When I am compelled to stand and say the pledge, I'll get to the one, I'll do one nation, indivisible, and then I'm silent, you know, with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't there. Anybody who knows the history of the pledge knows that that was added as a function of right-wing Republican reactionism during the Red Scare of the 50s.
Right.
It's very easy to...
1954.
It's very easy to Google, you know, using the Google... let's try this. Original Pledge of Allegiance. This shouldn't be take very long, because the fun part of it is, it was written originally by a Baptist minister from Massachusetts with socialist tendencies.
Yeah, Christian socialist.
Yeah.
He was the cousin of the other Bellamy, who was a socialist.
Yeah, his name was Bellamy, wasn't it?
Yeah. He was the cousin of the utopian socialist Edward Bellamy.
Let's see. The original Pledge of Allegiance read as follows. I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Because the important part of that pledge back then in 1892, when Francis Bellamy wrote it, was the indivisible part. Because in 1892, that whole conflagration that embroiled the nation only 30 years before, or less, the end of it was less than 30 years before, was still fresh in a lot of minds. There were still a lot of veterans left standing. Who had repelled Pickett's charge at Little Round Seminary Ridge? Cemetery Ridge? Can't remember.
Cemetery Ridge.
And the idea of an indivisible nation was rather important.
Yeah.
And you know what? I read that and I don't have a problem with that. Now I can see where if you're of a religion that finds the pledging to a flag a little bit idolatrous, I can certainly understand that, Cossack.
Yep.
But I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands. You know, I think these words were very carefully chosen.
Yes, they were. And you realize that Supreme Court decision that said that you didn't have to say the pledge.
Mm-hmm.
You realize what that decision was, right?
What was it?
West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett.
Yes, it was. Yes, yes. Who were the people who were complaining?
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yep.
Yeah, because they still don't say it.
Correct. And they've even said that you don't have to stand for it. The Supreme Court has said that compulsory opinion violates the First Amendment.
Because it's a question of freedom of conscience. But then again, if you were to ask a right-winger Cossack, they would tell you that freedom of conscience does not exist within the First Amendment because the words freedom of conscience aren't in the First Amendment, and therefore it's not really there. Just like Ken Buck in Colorado, running for Senate, said that there is no such thing as separation of church and state because the words separation of church and state are not in the First Amendment. See, that's why it's so... I can't imagine. Can you, Cossack? I cannot imagine what it must be like to have, to be a teabagger and have to live with all of that cognitive dissonance just going, you know, like a 10 kilohertz tone inside your head. Because on the one hand, there's no such thing as separation of church and state because the words separation of church and state don't exist inside the body of the First Amendment. But on the other hand, the Second Amendment is an individual right and not a collective right, even though the actual words of the Second Amendment say that it's a collective right, you know, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the preservation of a free state or whatever it is.
Right.
So you've got to be a right-winger, to be a Republican, to be a teabagger, you've got to be able to literally just get to pee, to like something of a horror movie. This is Halloween, after all, where you've got to be able to just peel your skull open and just with your bare hands reach in and separate your own brain out into separate quadrants where you can believe a whole mess of completely conflicting things at the same time and not just have your head go all Mars Attacks and explode.
Correct. And, well, worse than that, do you recall seeing pictures of kids taking the pledge before World War II?
Not offhand.
Do you notice, well, I was going to say, if you had, did you notice the way in which they were pledging? It was the Bellamy Salute, which, for all intents and purposes, is exactly the same salute they were using in Nazi Germany.
Oh, dear.
It was the stiff-arm salute to the flag. And this went on until December 22nd, 1942. That is how you pledged allegiance, with a stiff arm salute to the flag.
That kind of had to go.
Well, yeah, but it took them until 42 to get around to it. Now, that's when they passed the flag code that you had to place your hand over your heart.
Jesus.
And worse yet, oh yeah, let me, with that little incident about the Pledge of Allegiance that
yes.
I brought up.
Yes.
It was noticed that I wasn't being a good American by reciting essentially a Boy Scout pledge. And more than once we had to straighten matters out in the hallway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How dare I? Excuse me. First of all, this has nothing to do with whether I'm a good American or not. Yeah, this came from Boys Day, you twit.
You know, it's interesting. I just checked, and you're right. Well, if the photo I'm looking at is real, and it says it is, it's a photo from 1899 of children reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. And they're not doing the straight arm out Nazi salute. Instead, it looks like something from Star Trek. They've got their right hand held across their body, their right forearm across their body, with their palm downward over where the heart would be. Which is more kind of a, which is really more of a Romulan thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that the Wikipedia page?
Yeah.
Scroll down just a little bit and look to the right.
Go! Oh! Jeebus! Huh! And God, that looks like, you know, that looks like a little gem and a little scout in there. There I go talking about photographs on the radio again. Someday I'll learn. But yeah, if you go to Wikipedia, Wikipedia Pledge of Allegiance, you'll see a photo of students. Yes, down on the lower right, students pledging with the Bellamy salute, which looks a heck of a lot like somebody else's salute. So we've got a Romulan salute and a Nazi salute.
Mm-hmm.
Sure makes me feel good about the pledge. How about you?
And, you know, the thing that you played earlier about those lunatics and the pledge.
Yeah.
I swear to God, more than anything else, that sounded to me, you know, you said it sounded like bah, bah, bah. To me, it sounded more like, Ein Volk! Ein Reich! Ein Führer!
No kidding. You know, I actually, truth be told, because, you know, you've talked about your heritage and everything on the program, Cossack, I thought of you. I thought of you when he got to the point with, well, the word czar is in her name.
That has nothing to do with anything.
But wouldn't that be, Czarnik, wouldn't that be Czarnik?
It depends.
Well, yeah, it does. It
where
right.
it came from.
Right.
Which country, because it could be czar, it could be czar, it depends. And, you know, they only added in the under God into the pledge in 1954.
Yeah, in fact,
a commie spy choke on it.
Right, because it's just like a servant of Satan can't say the word Jesus without breaking into a sweat, you know. Right.
Correct.
In fact, David in Tennessee just told me he remembers it very well. 1954. He said it happened during his fourth grade year. He said that one day the teacher came in and said, the pledge has been changed. I have written the new pledge on the board. We'll read it through once before we do it.
Oh, goodness.
And thereafter, evermore.
Unbelievable.
You know, I think we should start a new movement in this country, Cossack. We need to amend the pledge again. And it needs to, I don't want to take out under God. It should be, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, forever and ever and ever. Really, no, we're not kidding. We really, really mean it. Please, Jesus, understand. We really, really mean it. And let it end that way.
Gosh.
Or, you know, one nation under God. No, really. Please. That would be elegant. One nation under God. No, really. Please. You like that?
I mean, I think the whole thing should be abolished, but that's just me.
Well, you know, I take a dim view of idolatry. But then again, I take a dim view of religion, so nobody's probably...
Exactly.
Yeah, my opinion probably doesn't count for much. Cossack, I hope you have yourself a great weekend, brother.
You too, Bob. And I was hoping to invoke either Sandra or Jim. Hopefully they will pop up.
I got five other blinking lines here, so one of them might be them.
I hope so.
All right. Later, Cossack.
All right. Take care.
Bye now. Let's see. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, your servants, bathed in the blood of the Lamb, with liberty and justice for all. Amen, sweet Jesus. How's that? I'm sure the American Family Association would just love that, wouldn't they? William writing in, talking about, referring to our reference to Megan telling us about Andrew Breitbart doing the analysis for ABC News on election night. And I had mentioned that, of course, ABC is owned by Disney. And William writes in and says, Disney's a real freak show. I'll just use the example of the Hollywood Bowl, says William. My wife and I used to go there a lot in the 80s. Nice place, plenty of trees, park benches along a narrow walkway where people brought picnic baskets and their own wine. The last time we were there was in August 2006 to see Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with the Impeach the President concert. Everything had changed. Cheap gift shops, a wide path with all sorts of ads on signs, and no more bring your own wine or food basket. No, the mouse doesn't like that. It was not until I really looked around and then went onto the concert section to view the concert we saw online to relive it. Every concert they did was there except the Hollywood Bowl. This was when it struck me that Disney bought the bowl and soiled it, completely soiled and ruined it. I think on November 2nd, I'll get out my guitar and play Working Class Hero and drink my wine and wait for the clouds to part. That may have been, that, and you know what, William? That may be the single sanest thing that we that may be the best approach. It may very well. Oh, by the way, thank you. I should note another member of the Thrifty 250 just kicked in a couple of minutes ago. You know, tonight is our last night to be able to raise funds for the month of October. And if we get just 22 more members of the Thrifty 250, that's 22 more people who are willing to kick in $10 tonight, we will have made October's fundraising goal. And we'll get all of our bills paid for a change. And not sweating the bills. I really can't tell you how much easier it makes it to do this show without sweating. Hey, am I going to be on the air tomorrow night? I don't know. Light's going to be on tomorrow night? Don't know. But you know how that goes. So it is Halloween night. I do have five blinking lines, and let's find out who's on them. Or it's trick or treat night here. It's not actually Halloween. But I do want to take a little bit of time toward the end of the program and just have some Halloween fun, if that's okay. And nobody's there. And let's try this. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra, you were conjured.
I know, I heard that. I thought that was kind of amusing.
Well, it's spooky, too. I mean...
Very. Well, so, yes, I read that New England's hidden history...
Wasn't that fascinating?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not that surprising, but it seems like it's a big revelation up there.
That is the surprising part. And what we're talking about, News Ninja Gene sent me an article last night from Boston.com. It's about a month old. But from Boston.com, New England's hidden history, and it's about the presence, and you know, we don't talk about it, the presence of the active, pervasive presence of slavery in New England. Because, you know, that's something that happened in South Carolina and Mississippi, right? Except for the fact that one of the guys who led a slave uprising wound up having his body hanged in the public square.
For 20 years.
Yeah,
well, I also thought it was interesting that, you know, how Kagan fit in. Didn't you think that was interesting?
I thought, yes.
I mean, the fact that she, these people are so, okay, bless her for stepping away from it, but, you know, why so quiet? You know, might miss out on a little money. I mean, I know I'm being a real bitch, but I'm like, okay, I'm glad you separated yourself. So I look at her a little bit more favorably, but they're always so, calculating when they do these, what you would think would be, easily done good thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like this shouldn't be as complicated as it's being made out to be.
Right, right. But with that said, I have to say I was shocked to see that she even put her neck out that little, to be honest, after I heard her.
Well, and you know what? You gotta be sort of supportive of people when they do the right thing, even if it's a little right thing.
Well, after she took some lessons skeet shooting with Scalia, I was really sort of, my eyes were rolling back in the back of my head. I was thinking, oh, dear God, because she was at some shooting range with Scalia. He was showing her how to...
See, you couldn't, if I was her, you couldn't get me within 100 yards of one of those right-wing members of the court with a gun in their hand.
Exactly. No, I was just, and the whole story just killed me, because I'm thinking, ew, I mean, I realize it's an old boys club, and you do whatever, but, you know, I don't need to, yeah, anyway, but so, yeah, the sheer, you know, amount of slaves, you know, I'm always amazed by just the numbers in this country. And, yeah, everything you look at, you find out it was built by free labor. That's another thing that stuck out about the article is, Harvard and all these other sort of landmarks. You dig a little deep, and it's always some darkie that put the bricks up, right?
Yeah. yeah, it's Harvard, Yale.
And the Brown thing is great because, oh, yes, indeed, it may have been some Jack and Jill black person, but it was a black person that exposed that trip, the president.
Yeah, you know, I think we were talking the other night, and one and our conversation, I think it was you and me, our conversation turned around toward Brown versus Board of Education and all of that. Fascinating little piece of historical trivia to pass along, and it sort of has to do with all this Ivy League stuff. One of the very first persons of color to be admitted to Yale University or Yale College or whatever it was at the time, law school, was having a hell of a time trying to pay tuition. Mark Twain found out about it, asked around about the man's character, and made sure that he made it all the way through Yale, no questions asked.
Shut up.
Yeah. Well, but here's the fun part. So he goes off and becomes the leading light among African American lawyers in I want to say North Carolina or something.
Hmm.
And in his later years, takes under his wing, and he was known for being an absolutely brilliant lawyer. Can't remember the guy's name now. But in his later years, toward the end of his career, he has a clerk in, you know, an intern we'd call him now or whatever, a young law student that he takes under his wing and teaches the lawyering business to, because that's how lawyering works. And the young lawyer that was taken under the wing of the lawyer who was put through law school by Mark Twain, the young lawyer's name was Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah, that's interesting. And also it definitely sort of speaks to the value of networking, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Speaking of it, since we're still talking about the rarefied Ivy League air, it just reminded me of that. I think I sent that article to you a while ago about the professor from Brown who was talking about always sitting alone on the train.
Yes.
You know, that's a black guy. You know, but it was all.
Yeah, and he commutes on the train, and the train's always crowded. And what is that? That's the Acela, that high speed, the best we've got in the way of high speed rail that runs in the Northeast Corridor. And he says, you know, I've got an hour and a half train ride or whatever, and I always love it because I get to sit on the train and I get two seats to myself. I can stretch out, put my briefcase down. Nobody ever wants to sit next to me because I'm the black dude.
Well, and it's just, I mean, I was, you know, I read the whole thing, and I was just, of course, I'm thinking Jack and Jill, because I'm always keeping track of the sort of, you know what I mean when I say Jack and Jill, right?
Yeah, I do, but go ahead and elaborate, please, because...
Okay, well, I was just sort of amazed that the guy is, you know, straight up elite sort of professor, black, yet he's writing this op-ed about not having a passenger sit next to him on a busy train like that. I mean, the whole thing just sort of freaked me out and blew my mind at the same time.
Yeah, because it was unsettling on the one hand, and yet because the guy is an erudite, he's educated, it's not like he's wearing pants that are hanging halfway down his butt.
Right, no, he's part of the you know, whatever, the scene that probably...
The Ivy League privileged class.
Right, the other people who were riding, and that's why I was just sort of, you know, I was like, damn. So, anyway, that's a bit of a sidetrack from that, but since we're talking about all those Ivy League schools there, yikes.
Well, you know, the thing, I've got a literary bent, and I read that article at Boston.com, and the first thing I thought of was Herman Melville. Because I've read Moby Dick a couple of times, Sandra. And it ain't easy. Because it's that, you know, sort of stilted, stodgy, the mid-19th century English. I find it easier to read Shakespeare, frankly.
Well,
I remember reading Moby Dick and I'm thinking, what in God's name is Queequeg doing in Massachusetts? Because remember, Queequeg was, you know, this tattooed up barbarian, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, listen, that book. Okay, yeah.
But if you think about it, because the question that I was asking is,
of myself was, what kind of cult, you know, this was all based on reality. Even the story of Moby Dick and the shipwreck and everything was based on the real wrecking of the whale of the whaling ship Essex. And there must have been a significant culture of color in that, in those whaling communities. And you know, my suspicion was that no, in fact, they were not fully equal within that society. And moreover, the article brought to bear the fact that what would happen is you would have slave owners in New England who taught honest-to-God crafts, you know, marketable skills to slaves, and then when slaves were slowly emancipated, they refused to hire them for money.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the thing. But, you know, every time I think about that area, of course I think of Phyllis Wheatley, because it used to drive me up the wall having to listen to that crap, because she was writing about the love of George Washington and all the other crackers she was around. And, you know, she was one of those so-called slaves that was given the, quote, good life.
Yeah, with manacles on.
Right.
Because, you know, because I don't care how nice the prison is, you know, people joke, well, you know, he was convicted, but he was sent to a country club prison. You know what? It may be a country club prison, but it's still a country club prison, and the gate still clangs shut, and they still shoot your ass if you try to leave without permission. The same thing with being a comfortable slave.
Well, yeah, exactly. And all the sort of, the whole bit about how so many whites were sort of snatching the poor blacks and taking them back down south was another thing I noted, too. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's no wonder that Underground Railroad went all the way to Canada.
Oh, no, you don't stop in the U.S.
You know what I'm saying? Because I was just thinking...
No, because those signs that said, don't let the sun set on you here, went all the way to Canada.
Right, right. No, it's just that's what stuck out. I thought, damn, you know. I mean, you can't. I can't even fathom trying to put my head in the space of, you know, just how hideous that is. You know, you're like, hey, damn, I'm in Boston, you know, trying to catch up with whatever Negro you make contact with, and then you get snatched and taken back to South Carolina or something? Shoot me now, you know?
Yeah, you do not have to take me home and shoot me later. You can shoot me now.
Oh, my God. But anyway, that article is really...
Well, since we're on it, Sandra, let me just say that the other thing that got me going and what I mentioned to you is... I hadn't given it any thought. And for somebody who loves history as much as I do, I was kind of ashamed of myself. But yeah, next year, 2011, we're probably going to have some sort of commemoration all over the country of the sesquicentennial of the outbreak of the Civil War.
Yeah, no, I saw that too, and I thought, oh yeah, snap. You know, it also didn't occur to me, but unfortunately, I'm not too pleased about what the environment's going to be like in this mug.
Well, that's where my poor little brain was going, because I can't imagine that this is going to work out at all well with a bunch of Republicans running the government, if indeed that is what happens.
Oh, listen, since you mentioned the Melville, you know, he wrote a really good short story, though, that Barnaby, and I can't remember the whole Wall Street story.
Bartleby the Scrivener.
Yeah, that is an outrageously good, I love that story.
Yeah, I prefer not to lives in my vocabulary.
That shit is great, okay? I thought that was like one of the best short stories I've read. And I'm not a big fan of his either, because I just thought that Moby Dick was, you know what I mean?
Unbearable?
Yeah, and because I was forced, it was sort of required. So, you know, that makes it even hideous, more hideous sometimes. Anyway, listen, what state is running some horrible, I shouldn't say horrible, some murderer who has a good chance of being congressman, some idiot who shot up some Iraqis 60 times?
Are we talking about the West guy in Florida?
Now, I think he's in South Carolina, but he's some sort of, you know, some officer. He was on trial.
No, that's Florida. That's Alan West.
Okay.
Yeah, he was disciplined for, wasn't he the one that was in that scene where he was interrogating an Iraqi and put a gun to his head while he was doing it?
Well, no, this one was on trial and he was found, he was acquitted, but he shot two prisoners that he took, total of six.
I think that was, I really do, I think that was Alan West.
And he's, you know, he's running in, no, this isn't, he's running in some conservative district, and the Democrat won't even bring up the issue because it's all so okay with everyone. But I'm thinking, okay, you have some idiot who's some sort of murdering SOB, then you have the Nazi wearing one in Illinois. I'm just sort of, you know, it's some really scary people who are trying to get power in this country right now. I mean, not even a facade. Usually it's a facade, right?
Right. No. All pretense. The rubber mask is off, Sandra.
Right. Because I was like hearing about this dude, and I'm thinking, you know, that just freaked me out. I'm thinking, ew, you know, just sort of a straight-up sort of murderer.
Well, my God, with Glenn Beck and that woman in Illinois, you're, the head of the Illinois League of Women Voters, she's apparently got a last name that's sufficient to get her killed. You know, because her last name is Czarnik. And Glenn Beck says, well, her first name does begin with Czar.
Oh, no. Listen, and these people stay on the air. I'm just sort of amazed. Oh, listen, breaking news. Corporate profits climbed 62% from the start of 2009 to the middle of this year. So who says that Obama's not the plutocrat president?
Yeah, what are the corporatists complaining about?
Well, that's the thing. That's what
they couldn't get that under Bush.
No, and that's what kills me more and more about, you know, president not too sure, is he is doing his best, bending over backwards for business, and he ain't getting no respect. Anyway, I just thought
62%. Not good work if you can get it.
Yes, that just sort of stuck. I thought, oh God, this is just awful. You know, so, and the sort of, I mean, they doing straight up, they sent a note out, you know, framing the race as we know that, you know, you may not be too happy at the moment, but this is part of just a load of bullshit. It's part of a social movement and we can't stop now. And it's like, wait a minute, where was you a year ago? You were doing everything you could for your rich benefactors. Now you're coming back to us? No.
Well, see, I was on the air just a few minutes ago when an email rolled in. Oh, there it is. No. An email came banging in that said, you know, and it was from Barack Obama. You know, I always giggle a little bit when I get the emails from Barack Obama. You know how that is.
Right.
It was because my Facebook page has been completely polluted. It was Natalie Foster for Barack Obama, for Organizing for America. My Facebook page has been completely polluted by people putting this button that says "Commit to Vote" on my wall, and I mean I must have had 100 of them.
You're kidding.
And I go in and I click like. And, you know, I got to tell you, it about halfway pisses me off. You know, I'm here, I'm 3 hours of freaking night doing this, and I finally put something on my Facebook page that says, listen, please stop putting this on my page. If you've ever listened to my show for 1 minute, you know that I'm going to the polls.
No, listen, I mean, this is, yeah.
Like, and so, you know, this evening during the show, Sandra, I get this email from Organizing for America. Have you seen the new Commit to Vote challenge? It's an incredibly simple and fun way to compete with your friends and get voters to the polls all over the country.
That's bordering on working for free. And I realize it's an election, but at this point, they need to pay me to vote, you know. That might get me out.
I mean, I'm going, and you know, it's moments like this is my Jack Kerouac moment, you know, that scene from On the Road where he says, "I walked through the dingy Denver jazz," you know, the Kerouac writing.
Yeah.
And I wish that I was any color but white. You know, I gave myself just one little iota of a second, Sandra, because I'm so pissed off at these repiglican sons of bitches, who are trying to intimidate people of color trying to go and vote. You know, you just think, you know, just for a minute, God, just come on, just not as pale as I am. A little John Boner tan would be okay. But let somebody come up to me, because you know what? I'm in such a mood. I'm going to start swinging before they get done asking me for my ID.
Oh God! You know, I mean, I can't even. I mean, thankfully that at least in Northern California, you know, I don't hear much going on than that, because that is something that is on. It would be on if someone even just started. I think I'd probably slap the hell out of them, and then I'd be off to jail, because I can't even imagine being harassed at the ballot. I mean, it's sacred, and you know, get the hell away. Hey, listen. How timely is this nice little terrorist threat? You know, I don't trust none of this no more, Bob.
Nope, I see one of those, and
he had the nerve to roll out on it. I'm like, oh, dude, you going Bush on us? Shit, the polls must be bad.
Today's terrorist color code is fuchsia.
Oh, my God, you know, it's like, come out and vote or else? Is that what's going on?
Voter die.
You know, hey, and listen, I'll let you go. But did you hear about McDonald's sending out?
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Oh, you already touched on that?
No, I haven't. I haven't. But no, McDonald's put out voter guides in their paychecks.
To be fair, it's a certain, you can franchise it. So let's be fair. It's just some hick in Ohio who has a shop. But yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, with a voter guide in McDonald's paychecks. And it says, as the election season is here, we wanted you to, it doesn't say McDonald's, it doesn't say McDonald's of Central Ohio teabagging McDonald's or anything. It's on McDonald's letterhead with the golden arches and the little R in the circle, you know, the registered trademark.
I know, but I'm just saying, isn't it in Ohio, though?
Yeah, it's in Ohio. As the election season is here, we wanted you to know which candidates will help our business grow in the future. As you know, the better our business does, it enables us to invest in our people and our restaurants. If the right people are elected, we will be able to continue with raises and benefits at or above our present levels. If others are elected, we will not. As always, who you vote for is completely your personal decision, and many factors go into your decision. The following candidates are the ones we believe will help our business move forward: John Kasich for governor, Rob Portman for Senate, and Jim Renacci for Congress.
I mean, it's just,
what does that tell you? It's in the envelope with the paycheck. Isn't that the economic equivalent of a horse's head in your bed?
No, and it's completely illegal. But as we're living under this economic dictatorship, which is, you know, what I'm now calling it, because, you know, F the political freedoms. If you can't eat and shit, what's the point?
Well, I know that I'm not, I wonder, well, I know I'm not, I don't go to McDonald's in the first place unless, you know, I'm dying. And then after I do, I feel like I'm dying again. But God, corporate's going to take some grief off of this.
Well, it's illegal. I mean, there's actually a law in Ohio that it's actually, I don't know if it's a crime. I think it's a criminal offense or something, because they have to pull back on that. But see.
Well, but wait, I read that, Sandra. Hold on. I've got the text here. No employer or his agent. Now, you have to learn to, you have to think, I'm not talking down, I hope you don't think I am. You have to think like a right-wing repig-licking lawyer. Remember back when the Pentagon was told that they couldn't data mine? The federal government could not data mine? So they said, well, the statute says we can't data mine, but doesn't say we can't hire someone in the private sector to data mine for us?
Oh, come on.
That's, okay, now, here's what the statute says. No employer or his agent or a corporation shall print or authorize to be printed upon any pay envelopes any statements intended or calculated to influence the political action of his or her his or its employees, or post or exhibit in the establishment or anywhere in or about the establishment any posters, placards, or handbills containing any threat, notice, or information that if any particular candidate is elected or defeated, work in the establishment will cease in whole or in part, or other threats expressed or implied intended to influence the political opinions or votes of his or her or its employees. Okay, that's the statute. Now, again, we're thinking like a right-wing, repig-licking, law-hating lawyer. It says you can't print it on the envelope. And it says you can't post handbills inside the workplace.
Oh,
it does not say that you can't put the handbill in the envelope.
And don't say you can't keep a foot on your employee's neck either.
Bingo.
Hey, listen, the quote for the day is, resentment abhors a vacuum.
Ooh.
So, listen, I'll leave you with that. Lovely thought, and a happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Sandra. Resentment abhors a vacuum.
Right. Bye.
Later. Sandra calling from California. And let's see. Trying to go forward here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes.
Andy.
Andy, how are you?
Redwood City, man.
You're there.
Doing great. Waiting to close up the day to go to a movie.
Oh, really? What are you going to see?
I want to see one of those trilogy films by Larson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think the new one is out.
Oh, that'll be a nice Friday night.
Right, as long as we can get in. It might be kind of crowded. Looks like they finally got a lot of press behind this one as far as... getting the movie out, because it is a Swedish film.
That would be... you're teasing me again, Andy. I'm going to go watch a Swedish film. You know, the closest thing I've got in this state is that, you know, I can walk into the bulk candy store and buy Swedish fish. So, taunting me with civilization.
One reason I like living here, it is being... close to civilization without being as inundated and tied down with the mass of humanity you have on the East Coast.
Yeah, civilization close enough to get to and close enough to get away from.
Exactly. Exactly. At least here you can still get away from things and get out into the outdoors, and you don't have to go all that far. Whereas back east, it seems like no matter how far you go, you never get away. You have to go a lot further anyway.
Yeah, no kidding.
The reason I called is, and you've touched on a lot of these items before, but man, I've just been blown away by Mr. Obama when, one, he went on the Jon Stewart show, and number two, he gave that, presentation to bloggers.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Daily Show audience laughed at him when he talked about his economic team.
You know, just the whole thing with John Daly, and like you as well, because you bring up that equivalency argument, I agree totally with that, but it's not funny. No, to me, this he tries to make it, and so does Colbert, that everything's a joke. What's going on in this country to me is not funny at all. And I have a hard time laughing. And doing this equivalency with even doing this gig over the weekend, I find it abhorrent, quite frankly. It's not a joke. You know, people's lives are at stake, people's jobs are at stake, and we're hurting, and I'm one of these people that are hurting. And Stephen Colbert, when he went in front of Congress a few weeks ago, too, with the migrant farmers...
That pissed me off.
It pissed me off, too. This is not funny. You know, these are people's lives are at stake, and what he's doing in Washington, too, is a joke, and trying to put this in a moral equivalency with Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck should be excoriated for what he does and should be left on that. If you want to have demonstrations, you do it through the grassroots, and you do it through the unions, and you do it through the people, like, you know, Mr. Smith did a couple weeks ago in the AFL-CIO and everybody who got down there, and you got some really good people, and even though I'm not a big fan of Mr. Schultz, at least they did it right there. I mean, at least that's the people.
Yeah.
Putting out and getting the unions and getting real working people together. But this stuff with Stewart just really turns my stomach.
Well, I mean, what's it going to be? If it's overtly political, it just can't be, can it?
It's not a laughing matter, and this is nothing. What's going on in this country is nothing to joke about. And when you have people stamping on the faces and the heads of people that you disagree with, I mean, we've gone way over the edge. Way over the edge. It's not funny.
And what can he say? What can this thing do be except a comedy routine?
Right, and that's what he's trying to do, and that's all I think he can possibly do.
And of course, I want to come at this from a different angle, Andy. If it's a comedy routine done at the expense of the teabaggers, what are the teabaggers going to do? They're going to be even more motivated. And people, I mean, you want to influence, and you know how I feel about those undecideds.
Dead from the neck up.
Yeah, but you want to put if they're really undecided, Andy. If you want to push them, a little bit in one direction or the other. A day long festival making fun of the teabaggers will do it. Because what does that mean? You get to look. There goes the liberal elite. Right.
Right. Right. Anybody who's undecided at this point in time has got to have been so out of it.
Oh, anybody who's undecided right now can't decide between vanilla and chocolate or chocolate and strawberry.
Right. They live in a fantasy world that I have no clue what it's all about. They're in another world, and they probably shouldn't be voting anyway because they don't have the mental capacity to even critically think, period. But it kills me, too. Obama made the comment, and I think it was through the bloggers, although it might have been with Stewart, that what are the liberals so upset about? I gave them 90% of what they wanted with the health care bill. 90%? Hell, you gave us maybe 10% of what we wanted. We wanted single-payer universal health care, just like the rest of the world has, a public program. What is he saying? We got 90% of what we want. We're lucky if we got 10%. And I wanted to hear people come back at him and go after him. And then the same thing, too. You said he laughed at Larry. They laughed. The audience laughed at Larry Summers, and he's given Larry Summers the brownie accolade. You know, like...
Is that tone deaf or what, to use the phrase, heck of a job?
Yeah. You know, again, these are people's lives and our economic well-being is at stake. And he put a Clintonista... Wall Street hack in that position who is so oblivious to what's happening to the middle class and the lower class of this country, it's incredible. The guy is totally tone deaf. He's not only tone deaf to the economic plight of people below his status, but he's tone deaf to women and he's tone deaf to minorities as well. He proved that. And to put an idiot like that in that position, and you think it's funny? Or people, or John Stewart's audience even thinks it's funny? I don't know. It's just, I find it, you know, reprehensible. And two, saying that he delivered with the financial reforms. God, if you didn't give us Glass-Steagall, you did nothing. You couldn't even bring us back to where the people in the 1930s brought us back to. And most of your Democrats, 12 of the Democrats in Congress, twice voted down Glass-Steagall from coming up in bills. The Merkley and the Levin efforts to put an amendment in there to bring Glass-Steagall back, and it could have been easily done, and they didn't do it. And then, of course, the Roosevelt comments, too, and Sandra alluded to that as well. I mean, they're trying to put out of the world of our minds that this problem could have been fixed. We have a 9.6% unemployment rate. Why does Germany have a 7.6% rate? Why does Germany... have a 7 point. Why does Venezuela have a 6.5%? And again, I said this before. And why is the Czech Republic at like 8%? I think Denmark is like 7%. I mean, what is going on here? These problems can be fixed, and Roosevelt did have the answer.
Andy, let me ask you a question.
This is not impossible.
Is the Roosevelt thing? Is that a case of the Obama administration trying to dog whistle in its own regard? Are they trying to signal to, I don't know, again, those dead from the neck up undecideds, are they trying to signal to them that they hate communists too?
I, I think the dog whistle is to Wall Street. I think it's these, you know, the business people that are constantly harping it. He's anti-business. Obama hates business.
And yet they just recorded a 62% annual profit last year.
Right, and they're sitting on, I've seen numbers, their cash positions in the Fortune 500 or in the S&P 500 is like $1.8 trillion to $3 trillion. I've seen estimates, you know, around there. They're just sitting on this cash and not doing it. That's why the supply side baloney of continually giving tax breaks and cutting the corporate tax rate down from 35% is meaningless, because they're sitting on all this cash anyway. This is supply side Reaganomics garbage. It doesn't matter. And I heard Alan S. Blinder on a show a few weeks ago that said the effective tax rate for corporations in the United States is only 8%. You know, so what? You have a 35% corporate tax rate. There's so many deductions and so many different write-offs that the effective rate is only 8%. And you might have a country like Finland or something that's got a 26% rate, or Sweden at a 25% corporate tax rate, but they don't, but at least they pay that full rate and they get money back for it and it pays off. But here, it's an, according to Alan S. Blinder, who's an ex-Fed vice chairman and a professor at Princeton, 8% is what his data shows is the effective corporate tax rate. That's why, and it used to be the corporations contributed 40% to our tax coffers of the IRS. Now it's like 5%. Come on, guys. Tell me, there is a reason why California used to be number one in education in the United States, and now we're number like 49. When you starve the beast of funds, it's easy. You know, when you're also 49th or 40th.
Yeah, well, thank Prop 13.
Spending. Right. Right, the whole Prop 13 thing just starved the beast, and that's what they did. When you starve the beast, you destroy the social program, you destroy education. Is that what these guys want? Do they like that? I mean, I just can't believe this reply. You like what you've done? You've just destroyed a society here. You've just destroyed kids that 20, 30 years ago, you know, had the number one education system in the country. Now they have the 49th education system. So your plan has worked? So that's worked? Starving the people? I mean, I can get so upset, Bob, and I know you get upset too. But they love this, and they seem to just bask in their glory of these cutting of taxes and starving the people. You just destroyed a society, gentlemen. And you're happy? Nah, that's my rant.
Well, I don't think it's a rant. Get a couple more thousand of you and the rest of the Horn audience, and we could start making some noise.
Now you got to be a one man army.
But the other side of it is that.
Or one woman army.
But the, yeah,
it's Sandra.
Right. But the other side of that coin, Andy, is that. It's one thing to do it here where we are willing to listen and talk amongst ourselves. You could not get 30 seconds into what you just said with a teabagger standing across from you, because they would do what teabaggers do. They would start screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And they would scream until it was absolutely certain that you could not get your point across. I hate to be a cynical horse's ass, but you know what? If it's in you, it's in the moment. I have said repeatedly that this is not an election coming up. This is not a referendum. It's not a plebiscite. It's not a mandate. It's an IQ test. And if it turns out the way the for-profit media is saying, Andy, we're going to find out on November the 3rd, just like we found out in November of 2004, that America, the country, needs to be walking around with knee pads, elbow pads, and a house helmet on. All the time. Because we're just that likely to hurt ourselves.
Right.
And America deserves, if the Republicans do what we are told the Republicans are going to do, and if it is a legitimate election, then all you can say is that the majority of the American people, and a whole lot of them thinking that they're middle class, and a lot of them lower class, who were voting for those teabagging sons of bitches, they deserve everything that gets done to them. I don't, you don't, we don't, but they do.
Right.
And that makes me sound like an ass, and I hate being that way.
Well, the shame is, when I've listened to some people in Nevada who were interviewed and who are going to vote for this complete reactionary pea-brain mental midget Sharon Angle, their reasoning is, I'm just voting for somebody other than Harry Reid because I hate Harry Reid. I'm just voting against Harry Reid. That is their reasoning.
You know what scares the daylights out? What scares the daylights out of me?
Out of there.
Yeah. What scares the daylights out of me, Andy, is that if the Republicans get the bit in their teeth, and they do what they've promised, and that is launch a series of investigations of the Obama administration geared toward an impeachment process, and shut down the government in order to, you know, work on the deficit.
And you know they will.
Yeah, and if they shut down the government, and if the checks don't go out, the teabaggers all around this country will sit down and say, well, see, that one in the White House has destroyed my check.
Right. These guys are not playing with firecrackers. They're playing with dynamite.
Yeah, they are. And the thing is, Barack Obama is not Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton weathered the government shutdown storm because he knew how to go eye-to-eye with Newt Gingrich. Barack Obama does not know how to engage in a staring battle. I mean, I will at least give Bill Clinton the credit for being a redneck and knowing how rednecks behave.
Right.
Barack Obama does not have that in him, Andy. He just doesn't.
Well, that's the super scary part about it, is that when they do get in there and they start doing, and he starts doing, I think Krugman even said this today in his piece, when you see the Clinton backflip, when you see Obama do the same thing as Clinton did, just friggin' go along with the Republican wave, and because both Obama and Clinton are so craven individuals, just wanting people to love them with no spine, with no principles, with no nothing, he will go along with that ride. He'll get paid off. They'll take care of him for the rest of his life, and he'll be a multimillionaire, just like Clinton is. And that's what Obama is going to do. He's going to go along for the ride, and he's going to sign those bills that are going to kill us, just like Clinton did. The same thing with NAFTA, with the Telecommunications Act, with Graham Leach Bliley just destroying a Glass-Steagall. Obama will do the same damn thing. It's hard to believe that there's still more things, but you know, Social Security will be the first to go. Bingo.
Now, see, I think Medicare will, because they can point
Medicare will go.
They can point more readily to the fact that Medicare has funding issues.
Right.
I mean, Social Security is rock solid until 2037, one way or the other. But
absolutely.
Medicare, they can claim, is just something that we can't afford anymore.
Right. Just let them.
And they know, not to beat a dead horse or anything, Andy, they know that because they control the messaging machine, that a Republican Congress can kill Medicare and blame it on Barack Obama and have the mouth-breathing knuckle-draggers go, yeah, that's what happens when you put a Negro in the White House.
Yeah, you got it. And Obama is...
God, I wish I was wrong.
Obama is scared to death of that echo chamber, and you brought it up, you know, about Breitbart. Geez, that's a scandal. That's a scandal, putting an individual like that in any kind of credible position on a major network. How scandalous. They should be ashamed of themselves, and I know they're not, because ABC is a right-winger fascist station. Another thing that killed me about Obama, and he doesn't apologize, is his HAMP program. That was supposed to be the loan modification program. He recently came out with that and said that would help 3 to 4 million people get resets. Now push that reset button and get those modifications on those mortgages and basically do a cram down, which is, of course, something else that he failed at, because that bill did come up. And it used to be that way in this country. When you went into bankruptcy, you had an opportunity to go before a judge and possibly it wasn't necessarily going to happen, but at least you had that chance to force a cram down on the mortgage company, would you could get your principal lowered and have a lower payment. And he was going to fix 3 to 4 million mortgages by this point in time, you know, a couple of years after that program came out. And he's only done 500,000 mortgages. And that's why a place like Nevada, which is the hardest hit place in the United States as far as foreclosures go, they are just getting crushed, the people that are there in foreclosures.
Oh, like I said, when I was out there,
nothing.
Yeah, when I was out there last summer, I had the opportunity, thanks to the kindness of a Horn listener, as a matter of fact, to go out into real-world Las Vegas and drive around in a neighborhood. And it was amazing. You know, here are all these little, you know, family dwellings, three bedrooms or so. You can throw a piece of toilet tissue, and you know how hard it is to throw that from one window and hit the next house. They're just stacked on top of each other. And every third house was empty with a for sale sign in front of it. It was everything but Clint Eastwood whistling noises and tumbleweeds blowing down the street.
And that was
the first time that I really, because you can't really see it here where I am in West Virginia, because I don't care if they start straving, if we have so much prosperity in the rest of the country that they start paving the interstates with solid gold, we will still be poverty stricken in West Virginia, because we're meant to be that way. But I looked at it and I went, my God, this was a prosperous neighborhood.
They have a very volatile economy and a lot of ups and downs and a lot of swings. In the West, it seems to be a lot more, and people also seem to be able to move around a lot more, but it doesn't mean that people don't want to stay in their homes. I mean, certainly you don't buy a home unless you expect to stay there, and a lot of people have that.
Right. I mean, nobody was living in that neighborhood thinking, I'm thinking I might want to live in my car instead. No.
Absolutely. It always killed me about Las Vegas, too. It was one of the places that years ago when I used to go there for trade conferences, I used to run around the neighborhoods jogging. It used to always strike me of how many barred doors and windows there were.
Yeah.
Definitely a little crime problem there, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, Andy, I got to roll, but I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Get to those calls. Great job.
Bye. All right, thanks.
Bye
now.
Bye.
And let's see, just for the sake of trying to get through all the blinkers, let's try to get through all the blinkers, I hope. Or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
Well, I was going to mention, I got kind of sidetracked, actually. Andy always has interesting comments, although I have to say I disagree regarding the Restore Sanity get-together. I'm kind of excited about it. And
do you think it can be beneficial?
I do.
It seems to me like it's a great big open-air the night at the comedy club.
Yeah, and I'm always up for some good laughs. I think it's a healthy thing.
Oh, God knows I need a laugh.
It can even be a radical thing. I think there's a new documentary about laughter called Laughology or something like that. And it's played some important roles in movements, apparently. But I understand the potential drawbacks to it, the timing of it and stuff like that.
Well, I do wish Jon Stewart would stop with the false equivalencies. Because there is not a Glenn Beck on our side.
You know, I think Medea Benjamin has written a very critical letter as well regarding that issue. I think Stewart was kind of making fun of Code Pink at one point. I don't know the whole story, but I know there was some.
No, I wouldn't be surprised.
But there again, I have no doubt that Code Pink will be there tomorrow and will be milling among the crowd, and another opportunity for progressive people to gather. And some people I think will make some very good use of the time. And and then there are these satellite get-togethers going on. There's one in Denver tomorrow that I'll be stopping by at for sure. I'm going to take a bunch of documentaries with me and share some, films like Gasland and stuff like that, The Corporation.
Well, I'm gonna monitor this thing tomorrow. I don't know. Maybe Lewis Black's on the agenda, and if he is, I know there'll at least be some. I'll hurt myself laughing.
Oh, okay, great.
I mean, if he is, I don't know that he is.
This morning I was listening to Bill Press, and he had on a Democratic, somebody having something to do with the administration, I don't know, like an official Democratic person. And they were going to be there and try to get some people to man or staff phone banks while they're there in D.C. I thought that was a good idea. So, yeah. I think it's a good thing. Also, I happen to catch, I don't catch the shows, both Stewart's and Colbert's, as often as I'd like to, but I did happen to catch Colbert the evening after the woman was stomped at the Tea Party deal. And it was both hilarious and so critical. You know, took it all very seriously and just were delivering blows against this whole unhealthy mental space that so many right-wing fanatics are in. You know, it's this constant use aggression in every direction, you know, towards, you know, economic refugees that they call illegal aliens, towards Muslims, towards gays, and yeah, towards Move On protester. And so Colbert delivered a few blows against it. It was a wonderful thing to see. And he had me rolling. I was just laughing. I mean, that one clip of the guy who stomped on the lady where he said, I think she owes me an apology, you know, and he's got a bad back. Colbert was like, that's right, everybody. He was going to bend over and punch her in the face, but he may have slipped a disc. So how thoughtless of her. And she should have known that what she needed to do was cover herself in one of these. And they showed this graphic of the Don't Tread on Me flag. It was brilliant. So, anyway, I'm looking forward. Here in Denver, their get-together, I know one of the speakers is going to be a guy named Johnny Five. And he's the rap. He's the MC for this group called the Flowbots, which is a hip-hop group in Denver, doing some very interesting, politically conscious work, for sure. You know, sometimes people kind of pine away for the 60s. Where's the 60s protest music?
And well, it's out there.
It is out there, definitely. I don't know, maybe it doesn't have as wide a space in our...
Well, I think it's a function of how music gets out now.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear it on a radio station.
Yeah,
it's going to go word of mouth, or it's going to go word of internet, and you're going to buy it for 99 cents at iTunes or Amazon or some such like that.
And it's moving along, I think, through those channels. It would be good to have some of those good independent FM channels that we had in the past, but even there are some good college stations around the country and some very good community radio stations, and you know, Pacifica and public radio, that they're doing some good work spreading world music, which I think has been, you know, maybe not explicitly political, but yet very political. I mean, that you're sharing world music, respecting the art of other cultures, you know, and again, back to the right-wing fanatics, they hate multiculturalism. They want a monoculture.
They want a mono-white culture.
Mono-white corporate culture. And, yeah, and it gets pretty dull rather quickly.
You know, you can only take
moment,
you can
so.
Only take so much Perry Como. Hey, Preston, I got to roll, brother, because we're almost out of it. But have a wonderful weekend, all right?
Yeah.
All right, good hearing from you. Take care.
Bye-bye
now. And let's see, just try to work in a couple more. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. Hey, it's Haven.
Hey, Haven, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Haven't had much time to call in, but I've been listening in here and there. And I've been tremendously critical of Obama and that sort of thing, and I continue to, you know, to be that. But he is, one thing that I decided to do was over the, you know, recently I've been working the phones and actually phone banking for this election, and they give you the assignments of where they want you to phone bank at, and so I was able to make calls to Virginia Fox's district.
Oh, fun. You know, she's
yeah.
Apparently in trouble.
Fifth district in North Carolina, it's Winston-Salem. Not Winston-Salem, but it's just to the left of Winston-Salem. And
doesn't she go as far as Chapel Hill?
No. She
goes okay.
Winston-Salem and to the west of that to
No.
Wilkesboro.
Okay.
Wilkesboro.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'm calling Democrats. I've gotten hung up on a couple of times. And the calling list that they gave me was, had quite a, mostly women, 50, 60, 70s, a few in their 30s and 40s, but for the most part, 50s and 60s and 70s. And I found just a couple of people who were actually really enthusiastic to vote for Obama and had no problem with it. But, you know, the script that they gave me to read starts off with Organizing for America, which used to be President Obama's organization, the successor organization to Obama for President 2008. And as soon as I mentioned that, I was getting interrupted, I was getting hung up on, and these are my Democrats who apparently are just not...
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. There was more of that than there was... actually, most of the people I called were not even home, which I was kind of relieved about, actually. but several, as far as pro or con, for the most part, I would say it's almost 50-50, and it shouldn't be that way in that particular district. What I ended up doing was rewriting my script to just not mention Obama, or just mention him further along. Nobody knows who is running against Virginia Fox. That is Billy Kennedy. Apparently, he is not really favored by the Obama administration. They haven't spent any money on him, according to the blogs I was looking at, because I had to look all this stuff up. I didn't know who these people were. But I found out that Virginia Fox is running. Billy Kennedy is running against her. Obama's not spending any money on him. And yet, it sounds like to me, I would say she should be beatable. I mean,
well, the typically Republican newspaper in the district, Haven, endorsed Kennedy.
Oh.
And said, you know, she shouldn't be reelected.
Okay. hopefully, but what they're concerned about is, of course, jobs. And I was trying not to be flippant about it, but I almost said, I didn't say it, but I was talking to a lady who was easily closer to 70, and I said, well, you know, she said, we really, really need some jobs up here, and I agreed with her, and I almost said, well, if I listen, you know, given these YouTube videos, commercials from Virginia Fox, I would think that your main problem up there was terrorism rather than unemployment. But, you know.
Bit your tongue, did you, Haven?
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I hate to do it, but I got to roll out of here. We are fresh out of time. I'm so glad you called, though.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye now. And, man, we almost did it. Only two blinking lights left, but I got to get out of here. 2 minutes before the hour. Hey, 20 more Thrifty 250 $10 subscriptions, and we're done for the month. Just 20 more. Thanks, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful and safe Halloween weekend. We'll be back here Monday, and we'll have live election coverage on Tuesday. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Reverbo is our op-ed columnist at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Matt Osborne is our Southeast correspondent, OsborneInc.com. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our continued condolences go out to Susan upon the loss of her beloved husband, Donald. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to all of you. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.